Blog Talk Radio.
We have here of Suspense Radio. It's glad to have everybody back today. So thank you for listening, however you're listening, wherever you're listening, and of course, whenever you're listening. Excuse me. Got a little frog going in the throat. So we're happy to have everybody here. I'm your host, John Robb. Today we have three outstanding authors coming on the show for you. First up is going to be Reva White-Williams. Second is going to be, now I'm going to say this wrong, Giamatto. And then third, we're going to have number one New York Times bestselling author, Catherine Coulter. So it's an exciting show, so stick around, because 90 minutes of Suspense Radio starts right now.
Welcome to my nightmare. I think you're going to like it. I think you're going to feel you belong.
Again, everybody, welcome back here to the show. We're going to jump right in here with our first guest. Her name is Reva White-Williams. The book is called Restrike. You can find out a lot more information at RevaWhiteWilliams.com. So we want to thank her for coming to the show. So Reva, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Thanks so much for inviting me.
So again, so the book is Restrike. It is a Coleman and Diane Green mystery number one.
That's right.
So why don't you give everybody a little bit about what the book is about?
Okay. Coleman and Dinah Green are two young women who are in the art world in New York. One of them runs a print gallery in Greenwich Village, and Coleman writes for an art magazine. And they're getting along pretty well, and then a man comes to New York who wants to start a print museum. There is no print museum in New York, nor is it there one in the United States. And this man decides to just spend whatever he has to spend to get the work that he wants. And he spends way over the normal cost and so forth, and prices shoot up. And as it happens often when a lot of money is being thrown around, a lot of unpleasant people come out of the shrubbery to try to get some. And my two young women are quite distressed by what they're seeing around them, and it gets worse and worse, and then one of their friends is murdered. And it's obvious that it's part of this same greed that has come to New York. And they try to find out what's going on, and they get into a lot of trouble.
So this is, what would you say, is one of those good prototypical whodunits.
It is a whodunit, but it's also a lot about how it's done, because the term restrike, it refers to a particular kind of print, which is actually a forgery, and people buy them by mistake, pay a lot of money, and often never even found out they've been taken. But there are a number of kinds of tricks and so forth that go through this book that they have to investigate before it's clear what's happening. You don't find out what's happening until the very last page.
And this sounds like this is going to be an ongoing series, as, you know, this is the first book in the series, so people
yes.
can kind of jump right into the beginning.
Yes,
and
the second in the series is called Fatal Impressions, and it is finished and will come out early next year.
So you kind of decided when you were getting everything together and that you knew that you were going to, you know, get the book down, did you decide that these were the characters that you wanted to write about first? Is that kind of how the conception kind of happened?
That is right. I was actually inspired by a television series a long time ago called Cagney and Lacey. That was,
yeah, I love
that. Remember
that?
Well, those were two women who worked together very well, although they were very different and had different points of view. And my my two women are cousins, but they, again, are very different from each other and see things very differently. So as they attack these issues that come up, they bring different points of view to the solving the problem.
Yeah, Cagney and Lacey was probably one of my, you know, favorite shows growing up. It was the only one that I can remember that had, you know, two strong female leads and I guess you want to say in a male-dominated TV era where, of course, where it was all the police. So you kind of decided to do kind of the same thing where, you know, you have, you know, two females doing all of that. So that was great inspiration to kind of bring back those 80s movies, those 80s shows.
That was my idea, that really there wasn't anything like that around there at the time. And oddly enough, there's nothing like that around now either. So that's why I did.
Yeah. So getting into, you know, Coleman and Diana as actual, you know, characters and people, what would you say would kind of be like their strongest traits? What was one of the things that you wanted to make sure that you got across to the readers as far as, you know, your characters?
I hope that they will find both of them likable and interesting. Dinah is, I would say, is a more typical woman of her time. She was a person who thought that she would always get married and live happily ever after, and that's the way it was going to be. She never thought she'd be working or anything. And she has married, and maybe a few months before the book opens. It's not going quite the way she thought it was going to. She's not exactly happily ever after. Coleman never planned to do that. She always wanted a career. And she is more impetuous and more determined, and it's she who keeps doing the things to try to find out what's going on that put the girls in danger. Coleman,
and so,
Go ahead. I was just going to say, Coleman also has a dog that she takes with her everywhere, and the dog is important because it has an important role in the book.
So When you're putting together, you know, the mystery, give us a little bit about your mindset when you had the characters, but now you kind of had to try to build that world, and, you know, you had to get the villains together, you had to get the whole structure together. You know, give us a little bit of insight into your mind about when you were kind of putting the whole conception together.
Well, I think that the thing that I wanted to learn the most was how people had done it in the past, and I turned... First is for Agatha Christie, who I think everybody agrees is one of the great writers of suspense ever. And there have been analyses of all kinds of ways that she did it. And, you know, a lot of people turn to these just to be inspired. The first one is the narrator is a murderer, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I also studied a lot of other writers to see what they did, what their suspense tricks were, because after all, what you want to do is keep surprising the reader and making them think things are going one way and happen, but it's really going another way. And I found that there were a lot of tricks, many of which everybody sort of knows. Like at the end of every chapter, you know, kind of leave them guessing. You know, don't leave it closed down whatever you were talking about, but leave it up a little bit. And then I think you have to have enough characters in there so that people can think they're guessing who the bad people are, but you want to try to fool them. You don't want them to be able to figure it out immediately, and ideally they should go all the way to the end of the book thinking it's one thing, and in fact, it's another.
And so when you talk about those extra characters and the ones, of course, that, you know, and they're the ones who really make the book.
That's right.
Because it's all the extra, and it's everything that brings it all together.
Mm-hmm.
Which character would you say kind of gave you a little bit of surprise? You know, which one had a bigger voice than you thought would have when you decided to go ahead and put the book together?
Well, you know, it's funny. One character I created, who is a person that I thought was really, really a bad guy, and I gave him all sorts of terrible characteristics, and I was planning on getting rid of him. He was just going to be passing through for a particular scene or two. But I had it workshopped, you know, where people were telling me all what they liked and disliked. And all the men just loved this bad guy and kept saying, oh, Reba, please don't kill him. Keep him in the book.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. That you'll create a character that you think is going to have people respond in one way, and then they don't. They respond in another way. I would say that I usually put out there at least two or three people that you are going to be absolutely certain that are bad, and you're almost certainly going to be wrong at least once. And I think it's difficult to create a really creepy person that shows every sign of being a bad person, and yet at the end you're wrong. He isn't. So that's the kind of thing I try to do. And in terms of the most controversial person that I've had in a book is the husband, Dinah's husband. He's very, very protective and possessive of her, and there's a certain amount of conflict. And some people say, oh, he's such a wonderful husband, he's taking such good care of her. And others say, oh, he's so awful, why, I wish you'd get rid of him. So.
Yeah. But, you know, as long as you kind of, and I always tell authors this, as long as you garner some kind of an emotional reaction to a character, whether it's positive or negative, you've done a good job, because you've now made them memorable. You've made them to where people will not forget, because the last thing you want to do is have people go, oh, who is that guy? I don't remember. You know, you don't want them to be, like, non-memorable.
That's
so
right.
So it's a good thing. Yeah, so it's a good thing that people come back and they come, either, like I said, either positive or negatively. It, either way is fine.
I agree. The other thing.
And again,
is,
I just. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say.
Oh, no.
Set in New York. And that the because that's the art, that's where I knew anything about the art world. So I wrote about the art world in New York. And there were people who said, oh, no, you don't want to write a book set in New York anymore, anything like that. And I actually had letters from people saying, I really enjoy those little touches of New York that, you know, are through there. I haven't been in New York in many years, but it brought it back, that kind of thing. So you're never going to know exactly when you're being criticized for something whether you ought to change it. I just figure out that I'll just go ahead and do what I think and hope it works.
Yeah, I would. That's kind of odd how somebody would be like, yeah, don't write another book about New York. Well, I mean, it's only one of the largest cities
in the world.
And there's everything and anything there is to do. I mean, people that have never been to New York, I mean, you got about 10 cities within a city with
exactly.
All the little snacks that are going on. You got a bunch of stuff going on.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is, when you decided that you wanted to write this as a series,
mm-hmm.
did you go ahead and kind of plan that out with your first book? Or
yes.
Were you already kind of finished and then you said, you know what, I want to keep going with this?
No, I had sort of a series of ideas for the series that before I ever started writing the second one, I'd already was thinking about the third and fourth, because I wanted to keep my women busy and occupied, and I wanted people, I like to read series. If I read a book that I really love, I'm very disappointed if it isn't part of a series, so I can go on and, you know, read the others. So I like to think that other people will feel the same way about these books.
And I want to remind everybody that we're speaking here with author Reba White-Williams, and that's RebaWhiteWilliams.com. The book is called Restrike. And so when they go to your website, what's one of the first things, because the way that you kind of built this, what's one of the first things that they're going to notice that you would like them to kind of go to get them a little bit more idea about maybe who you are as an author, you know, about the book and all the things that you have going on? Because you have a lot of different, you know, posts on the side. You have a lot of different, like, historical things going on. Give us a look inside of that.
Well, I think the, one of the first things is that I wrote something called On Being a Bookworm. When I was growing up, I grew up in the South, and there was all this stuff about boys never make passes at girls who wear glasses, and don't be the smartest girl in the class because nobody will ever ask you out and all that. And then I went on to college, and there was still some of that. And I kept thinking, surely I can go somewhere where, you know, you can study hard and make good grades and still, you know, go out dancing at night and so forth. And after I came to New York, I ran into a number of women who were writing things, on paper I ran into them, who were writing comments about this, about being fussed at, about being a bookworm. You know, somebody like Oprah, for example, had that problem with her mother. And, you know, you'd be told to, you know, get your head out of that book and stop reading and go outside and, you know, act like a normal child and all that. And I was greatly relieved to find that there were a lot of other people who felt the way I did. And I get letters from people these days who have read this on being a bookworm, and they say, me too, I'm a bookworm too, you know, and I like to think that there are people out there who will read this and find out that they're not alone in loving to read and loving books.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing definitely I think that is good about today's day and age with all the e-books, everything going out, is there's now a lot more supply out there than there ever had been, and readers have a lot more options to be able to find different authors and find different genres and find a lot more things, you know, that interest them. And so what was one of the, you know, what was there a certain book or possibly something where you kind of said, you know, this is, after you read this, this is something that I want to do?
Well, let me start by saying that I've thought a lot about this lately because of learning that there were any number of children who were slow readers or couldn't read or didn't want to read and so forth until the Harry Potter books came along. And they literally leapt into reading because their parents might let them go to the film, and then they'd come home and they'd say, I want that book. And there are children all over, everywhere, who, you know, found a book that they liked, and therefore they began to read. Well, I think it's a miracle that a lot of the children that I grew up with ever read, because we learned to read on Dick and Jane and Spot. And they were the world's most boring books. It's kind of hard to believe that they could have made them more tedious. But as I grew older, I could wander through libraries and get things. And I first discovered mysteries, grown-up mysteries. And there were so many that I really, really liked. And I think one book, a mystery that I liked enormously, that I kind of wish that I had written, is Mysteries by Margaret Maron, who did a series and is doing a series, and it's set in North Carolina, kind of near where I grew up and went to school. And she got it so right. You know, she got everything right about the places. And her heroine is a judge, which is pretty rare, female judge. But it was so there, I mean. And it was so well done, and it just, and she just really got it right. And I thought, I'd like to do this. I'd like to figure out how to do this.
And so then you went ahead and you decided to start putting pen to paper. And, you know, coming up now, was Restrike one of the first things that you wrote, or did you have some things that were kind of earlier on?
I wrote a lot of nonfiction for a lot of years before I got to writing a novel because I could get paid for that. When I got out of college, I could get things, and I wrote about the arts, and I wrote about finance and so forth. And it's only been in the last few years that I felt that I could afford to, you know, write fiction, which may never pay a penny, of course. and that's always been my first love, but it just wasn't practical. so recently.
And now we have a, you know, we always have a lot of, you know, authors, especially, you know, new authors and people that are looking to break in to this crazy world of publishing, which is going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what was, how, you know, what was your journey? I mean, did you go ahead and send this out to a publisher? Did you get an agent? Kind of how long? Give us a kind of, you know, once the book was done, how your journey went in order to finally get it published.
Well, I had a lot of turn downs from agents, and I did not really ever try to go directly to a publisher because I had just been told it was virtually impossible. And then a friend of mine who was a writer sent my book, sent Restrike, to Emma Sweeney, who is a terrific agent, and Emma liked the book. And it was a struggle to get it sold because people kept saying, listen, it's just impossible for a new mystery writer, first-time fiction writer, to, you know, get a place out there. And so it took a while before Emma could do it, but she liked the book, and she just kept right on working hard, and I kept on writing. The thing is, I would say to anybody who's got a book that's being out there, don't stop. Just keep right on writing, because chances are every book you write will be better than the last one. You'll learn so much by writing. And don't lose heart. Things are getting better. Things are getting better now than they were a few years ago. And the other thing I would say is don't take it up unless you thoroughly enjoy it, because the odds on getting really rich writing is not great. They're the few, you know, out there. But if you really, really like to write and you have this tremendous feeling of you know, having accomplished something when you finish a book, it's worth it all. It's worth the wait and the struggle.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing, is to just never give up and to just keep doing it. I mean, because writing today, I mean, some people you can leave as a hobby, some people it's a business, but either way, it doesn't make a difference as long as you just keep doing it.
Absolutely.
And so, and that's something, like you said, that you just kept doing, and you kept going forward with it. And now, how many books do you have any idea how long the series is going to go? Or is it just going to be ongoing?
It's going to be going on for a long time. As I mentioned, the second one, Fatal Impressions, is finished. I'm in the middle of writing 3 and 4 right now. The third one is about half finished, and the fourth one that I'm just into. I usually try to work on 2 at once to kind of, you know, have a little bit of a break from one approach or the other. But I have notes for another half a dozen in a notebook of ideas to do something with it. And somebody said to me, well, how long will you do it? And I said, I guess I'll just keep on writing. I would say I'd keep on writing until nobody wants to read it, except I think I'd probably go on writing anyhow, even if nobody wanted to read it, because I do enjoy it enormously.
Yeah, and I think that, like I said, I think that that's extremely important to also, you know, love what you do, because then it doesn't kind of feel like work, does it?
No, it's fun.
And when you kind of want to let people know about Restrike, do you have any kind of one sentence, maybe a paragraph or something, that you kind of feel really captures, you know, the essence of the book?
You know, I wish I did. I've been doing a lot of reading in book clubs and so forth, and what I do is I usually, people ask me, this is a cozy, it's not going to be too violent, is it? I say, no, and not only that, there is a dog, and I'm never going to do anything bad to the dog. The dog is going to be
never,
okay.
Ever do anything bad to an animal.
That's right.
In a book.
And then what I do is, but I say, you are going to be possibly scared a little bit from time to time. Things are going to happen. And I take a passage, and I have several that I choose from to read where they are someplace and danger threatens them. And I want them to know that this happens, because it certainly is not a brutal book or anything like that. You're not, and also there is no blatant sex or anything. It is a cozy, but you are going to be maybe a little scared on their account.
And now, when you're going out and publicizing it, and you know you're doing a lot of promotion, and you're in a lot of places, where else can maybe people find out? Where else can they go to maybe either see you in person or check you out in other places or anything else? You know, going on to the future from you know from this point forward.
Well, you know, it's a wonderful thing, but because it does mean that an unknown person can have a you know, kind of be discovered, because I have had quite a lot of press, especially in the state of Connecticut. But I'm also have just been down reading in Virginia, and I'm going back to Virginia for a couple more reading opportunities. And I've been invited to come to Texas. Most of the things where when I'm going to be someplace, you'll see it on my website. You'll say, you know, Reba, where is Reba? Well, Reba's in Houston, or Reba's in Dallas, or Reba's in New Orleans.
Well, I'll tell you what, Reba, we want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about the book, Restrike. Again, everybody, RebaWhiteWilliams.com is the website. So wish you nothing but success, and we will look forward to maybe speaking with you in the future.
I look forward to that, and thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Thanks, Reba. Enjoy.
Bye-bye.
So, again, everybody, RebaWhiteWilliams.com, and the book is called Restrike, the first in her Coleman and Diana Greene mystery series. Go check it out now. We're going to take a quick break, and we are going to be back with our next guest, and he's going to tell me how to pronounce his name because I'm going to mess it up. But it's Giammoco Giamatto, and the book that we are in – we're going to be seeing everything that he's going to do. It's a little bit different than what we just heard about a cozy, more of a lot thriller, writing a lot more fast-paced. So we will be right back after this. So again, everybody, welcome back so much here to our next segment of Suspense Radio here on September the 14th or whenever you're listening to it. We want to thank you again for tuning in to Suspense Radio and checking out all of the radio shows now that we have coming on Suspense Radio, with Suspense Radio One-on-One, which is authors from the Partners in Crime Tour, and our big show, which kicked off here on September the 7th with D.P. Lyle and Jan Burke, called Crime and Science Radio. The other thing we are going to have on Wednesday, huge announcement on Wednesday, James Patterson is going to be a guest here on the show, half hour with James on Suspense Radio. Special time, again, this is going to probably be on demand. You guys can listen to however you would like to listen, whenever. But James Patterson will be on the show with me one-on-one here on Suspense Radio. So we're going to jump right in here to our next guest. His book is called A Bullet for Carlos. It is book one in his Blood Flow South series. His name is Giacomo Giammatteo, is what I got on that one. See, I knew I would say it right sooner or later. So, Giacomo, we want to thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
Hey, John, thanks for having me here. I love your show.
Hey, thank you so much. And thanks for agreeing to come on here, because we want to be able to speak to you with about the book, A Bullet for Carlos. And I'm just going to let everybody know, go to Giacomo's website, and I'm going to spell it for you now. It's G-I-A-C-O-M-O, G-I-A-M-M-A-T-T-E-O.com is how you pronounce it and how you spell it. So give us a little bit about A Bullet for Carlos. Let us a little inside the series here. Now that you're kind of on book one, people can kind of jump right in at the beginning and follow you out. So give us the inside scoop.
Absolutely. So A Bullet for Carlos is actually the second book I brought out, but it's the first in the Blood Flows South series. And I've got a total of three series that will be in the mystery suspense genre. The first one was Friendship and Honor, and this one, The Blood Flows South, it's got a different theme to it. It certainly falls into what I would categorize as the hard-boiled, you know, mystery and suspense type. So there are some violent scenes. You know, if anybody's squeamish, there'll be a couple of chapters they might go, oh, God. And there's some language of the streets that are in there. But the basic theme of the book is a little different. The whole theme is family is everything, and it stems from the main detective actually is a female in this one, which is the only one I've done with a female lead. And she was raised by a guy that she didn't know it at the time, but who was, you know, in the mafia. And of course, that brings up a lot of conflict after she becomes a detective. And that's where that whole theme of the family is everything. She's tied to, you know, the person who raised her with all these family ties and everything she learned, but she's now a cop, and she's got all of her commitments and oaths on that side.
So now when you also wrote a novella, and it was called Finding Family, and it was kind of the beginning. So that was kind of, I guess you said, the setup for A Bullet for Carlos and getting into your character here, Connie.
And kind of
the whole setup.
So Connie Gianelli is the detective, and the guy who raised her, who she calls Uncle Dominic, is the one who's in the mafia. After Bullet for Carlos came out, I got so many letters from readers who loved Dominic and wanted to know more about his early life that I wrote this novella that actually starts off, you know, when Dominic was a little boy in Sicily and how they came to America. So it's a short story that gives a lot of background on Dominic. And then the second book in the Blood Flow South series is in the process now. It'll be out early next year.
And so what made you kind of decide that this was the right time, you know, that you wanted to kind of bring out your character, Connie Gianelli, and her story and everything else that kind of goes along with it?
Well, after writing the first two books in the Friendship and Honors series, you know, I wanted to have a couple of different series. I didn't want to start off with one character, you know, or one set of characters in a series and be stuck there. I've seen a lot of writers who, and there's nothing wrong with being stuck if you're successful, but I've seen a lot of writers who start off with a series and after three or four or five, sometimes two things happen. I think sometimes the writers get a little tired of writing the same characters, and sometimes the readers are a little reluctant to buy into another book that they write. And so I wanted to just start it off differently with several different series and different characters, and that would keep me fresh, I thought, and also keep the readers fresh. But I do have some crossover. So like the detective from Friendship and Honor makes a, you know, if you will, a guest appearance in The Bullet for Carlos, and I have different characters appearing in different books.
So you kind of had it all as like the same world, just kind of running, you know, parallel with each other.
Exactly.
So then when people pick up A Bullet for Carlos, what's the one thing that you hope that they maybe get out of the book and continue to want to keep going forward with the series?
I think from what the readers tell me, and it's working, I think all of my books are a little bit different than a lot of mystery books. Certainly there are plenty out there that are phenomenal at this and writers who are far more talented than me, but I try to make my people real. In fact, almost all of my characters are based on people, personalities I've known or combinations of personalities I've known. So they're real people with real problems, and I let the readers get to know them, not just so a detective, you know, they've got a family life too. You know, they've got friends, they've got problems, and people can relate to them.
So
and
you
I
make
think that
them
helps,
more.
That helps build a following. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you kind of bring them down to, you know, the level of, you know, more realism and more things that people can relate to, it definitely gives them that, you know, that sense of, hey, you know, I could bump into this person on the street, or I could kind of understand, you know, where they're coming from and things like that.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Connie's a real tough detective, but she's not a superwoman. You know, she gets afraid when she's in a, you know, a dangerous situation. She worries about the same things other women worry about. So everything in the book is, it's a real life person. They just happen to be in this role in the book.
And the book all takes place in the United States, am I correct?
Yeah, Bullet for Carlos, actually all of my books are typically dual plot lines. So the Friendship and Honor series, they're split between Brooklyn and Wilmington, Delaware, which is where the people, the characters in the book grew up. And then Bullet for Carlos is split between Brooklyn and Houston, Texas.
Okay, so you kind of have them, but when you're looking at A Bullet for Carlos and you start bringing in, you know, whenever, you know, you start talking about, you know, drug lords and bringing in, you know, some of those aspects, did you go and do a lot of research on this topic? Because, of course, you know, there's a lot of things out there, of course, from the Mexican drug lord and all the things that go on in South America or Central America and the things that are kind of coming up in here into the United States. How did you kind of, you know, piece all of those things together in order to create the book?
Yeah, so my books are not what I would categorize as true police procedurals. So if anybody's looking for the kind of book where every form, you know, is filled out right and they go to a murder scene and, you know, all details are completely covered, it's not that. You know, I focus more on the characters and the, you know, the personalities and solving the crime. Now, with that said, I did a lot of research. I know several of the, you know, a captain and a couple of the big high-ranking officers in the Houston Police Department, and I know some from up in New York. And so I did a lot of questioning on, you know, is this real? Could this happen? You know, not necessarily does it happen all the time, but could this happen type of a question.
And what would be the one thing that you would tell an author that, you know, is looking to get into those, but maybe not have the connections, you know, that you do? How are they able to maybe, you know, construct a book with, you know, the police and asking questions and getting involved in those types of things?
Well, as you know from your other show that you just started, there are a tremendous amount of resources online. And, you know, Dr. Lyle, you know, there are so many resources out there. As long as you know that you're getting solid information, that's a huge place to start. And then it's surprising how many of the police departments are very open. A lot of them even have, you know, ride programs where if they're open to it, you can go ride with them and get an idea of what a day, you know, a day in the life of a detective or a policeman is. It's very interesting, and just about any of them will be willing to accommodate you.
Yeah, and some people might actually realize that, you know, it's not, I'd say probably 95% of it is really not that exciting.
No, exactly.
You know, it's really not. It's not Law and Order. It's not really that exciting. It's when you watch those shows like another 48 hours and things like that, I mean, you kind of see where they go. I mean, it's a lot of sitting. It's a lot of waiting. It's a lot of talking. It's not on the street, you know, chasing down bad guys.
Well, no, exactly. And that's why I think the big thing is you can't make a book realistic based on the actual day-to-day life or people would be bored to tears. So you have to take out the dull parts and leave in the rest.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. And the other thing is, which kind of one of your characters in the book, besides, you know, your main ones, and like I kind of asked this with all of the authors, is because these are the characters that kind of make the story. And so which one did you kind of feel, you know, gave you that bigger role, that one character that kind of stood out aside from, you know, the main ones?
I would have to say in Bullet for Carlos that it was Connie's Uncle Dominic. He plays in terms of page time, he plays a very small part. There aren't many pages where he's there, but he has such an impact on the book. And everybody seemed to have a great interest in him. As I said, I got more letters actually about about Dominic than I did all of the other characters combined. So that's why I decided to write that novella. He has a mysterious past,
of,
you know.
Yeah, and what kind of reaction have you gotten from readers? What's kind of the one thing that you see that is kind of a recurring theme when they kind of write you about the book?
I'd say the one thing, and I'm very happy about it, is that they all relate to the characters. They said they got so involved with the characters, the characters felt real. You know, can't wait for the next book. That type of that's the best thing in the world that a writer can hear.
And again, I want to remind everybody, we're speaking here with author Giacomo Giammatteo about the book A Bullet for Carlos, which is the first book. The first actual book, there was a novella before, in the Blood Flows South series. And, you know, and that's kind of an interesting name on its own, Blood Flows South. Where'd you come up with that name?
that's kind of crazy. So when I prepare a book, or a series at least, I always, take a lot of time to develop the characters beforehand. And so when I was developing her Uncle Dominic's character, and he came from Sicily, well, in Italy and Sicily, you know, there is a lot of north-south friction and conflict, and everybody always thinks of Sicily as the place where the mafia was and where all the bloodshed is. So that's where I decided on picking up that saying, because Dominic comes from Sicily. And then it actually comes into play again in The Bullet for Carlos. Connie's a cop in Brooklyn, and everything starts up there, but the trail leads her to Texas, where the drug lord is, and so, again, we're going south, you know, to where the real action and the bloodshed takes place.
And when you're looking back now in your other series, because you had your Friendship and Honor series with Book 2, you had Murder House Consequences, you had Murders Takes Time. Why did you kind of decide, and I know you mentioned this a little bit, but what was, the reason of maybe not bringing Connie into that series, or, spinning her off, onto her own and deciding to go another direction now, instead of maybe just kind of continuing on with the Friendship and Honor series?
Well, I am continuing with it. There will be six books ultimately in that series, and they all follow the rules of murder that are laid out in the first book. There are six rules of murder, and so each book will actually be named after one of the rules of murder. So Murder Has Consequences is the second one. Murder Takes Patience, which will be out next year, is the third, and so on until we hit the end of them. And the reason I didn't combine them is they're completely different types of books. So the Friendship and Honor, It's a theme of Friendship and Honor. It's about these young kids growing up together in this ethnic neighborhood, and they become, you know, the only thing that's important to them is their friendship and this code of honor they have together. And that holds true all their life, but then life, of course, does things and takes them separate ways, and one goes into the mafia, one does other things, and one becomes a cop, and their lives, you know, collide afterwards. And it's how they deal with this oath and this conflict of, you know, that plays the biggest part in Friendship and Honor series.
And, you know, you're one of the first ones I've never heard. So there's six rules of murder.
Right.
I've never heard that before. Where did you get that?
I made that up, of course. The hitman in the book made up his six rules of murder. And he gives, as he's training his successor, he gives him these rules of murder and teaches him how to become an expert. And each of the books is based off of that. So murder has consequences. Obviously, it's pretty apparent if you commit murder, something's going to happen. You know, murder takes patience, so it will play up on that angle of it. You know, murder is invisible. So all of the rules come into play in a book.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I never quite heard it like that, and so that it just kind of took me back when you just said that, and I was like, wow, that's very, very interesting. Very unique way of, you know, approach of looking at it, because I'd never seen it like that before.
Yeah, the other thing too, John, is most people end up liking it, and I've seen other authors do the same thing, but I tell all of my books in two different points of view. So one of the characters is a first-person point of view, and the rest of them are all third-person, and they'll alternate chapters that way. I think it allows for a much better read. You get real deep into the first person point of view's head, and you get, you know, to be able to look at everything from the third person, you know, point of view. And I think it allows for a deeper, more interesting read. I've had a few readers who didn't like that, but most of them do.
And how have you kind of been able to navigate your way through this crazy world of publishing that's been going on, and, you know, finding readers and being able just to connect with them? And I mean, you kind of spend
more time
doing all that than you do writing.
I can't stand it. Writing is the easy part. The most difficult thing is visibility. Getting the word out there, getting readers to know that you're around, and getting them to try your book. I have been extremely fortunate in that once readers have picked up my books and read them, they really like them. In fact, the reviews on all of the online sites have been tremendously good. If you sort by average customer review on Amazon, I've got all three of my books in the top 10 in the crime fiction and hard-boiled mystery section. So they've been very well received. The problem is just getting people to know that they exist.
And that's when you kind of go on, you just got to kind of hit the pavement.
You do blog tours, virtual tours, you do special promotions. In fact, I'm having a special promotion on Bullet for Carlos this weekend because of this potential award for the mystery book of the year. So it's on sale actually for 99 cents as a digital book, obviously, all weekend long. You have to do anything to get yourself out there and to get readers. And then you hope, of course, that readers tell other people about it. Word of mouth sells more books than anything.
That is definitely true. But tell us about this award.
So the Kindle Book Review, every year they do they pick out all the genres and they do an independent author Book of the Year award. And so right now I'm in the top five finalists for the mystery category. The winners will be announced in October. There's a lot of good books in that category, though.
Did you have to submit your book to that? Was it just picked? How did you find out about the process that your book was, you know, selected?
I was reviewed by them, and the reviewer actually told me that they have this awards. And you had to submit. You had to pick one of your books and submit. And I decided to pick Bullet for Carlos. And turned out good so far.
Yeah, really, especially if you win. So we could be, and when do you find out the results?
I think they said October 1st.
And so we could be talking right now a little early, a couple weeks early, with an award-winning author, because and that would be fabulous if that happened, that turns out that way.
Well, that kind of thing is great for you because it gives you some publicity and it helps your visibility, and that's what you need is the visibility.
Yeah.
There are so many ways to try to market the books, but every author is trying to do the same thing, and so you get lost in the noise.
And did you have some advice early on that you like continue with today that, you know, just keeps sticking with you?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, I just dived into this on my own. And the best thing, though, is there are so many helpful people in the independent publishing world, not just authors, everybody, the people who design book covers, the editors, the layout and formatting people, everybody seems to go out of their way to help you with advice and suggestions and recommendations. So it's been a really great journey so far. You make a lot of mistakes, but there are a tremendous number of good people out there.
And are you like on a certain tour now that you're doing?
I'm actually starting a virtual tour October 1st with Partners in Crime Book Tours. Cheryl Masiarelli, she's fantastic. And this is for my second book in the Friendship and Honor series, Murder Has Consequences.
So I've done two tours
with Cheryl, and I couldn't be happier.
So this is kind of like your Suspense Radio 101 kind of right here.
There you go.
a kickoff of the blog tour.
I'll take it.
Yeah, a kickoff of the blog tour. So, I mean, you know, it's a crazy business. And a lot of authors right now are getting kind of frustrated because either they're not selling, they just can't find anything out there to, you know, people to publish them or any agents or anything like that. What would be one of the one things that you would let them know? What would you tell them of why you have such success, like with your book, A Bullet for Carlos, and, you know, in your series and everything that you've been able to, you know, do so far?
I think the most important thing is the same thing that's always been there, and that is write the best book you can, believe in it, and keep writing. Very, very few people have success early on. There have certainly been some authors who've brought out one book and, you know, had a phenomenal hit, but they're like one-hit wonders in the music industry. You can't count on that. You have to count on building a following slowly and gradually. And I've seen that happening with mine. My first book has only been out about a year and a half almost. And the first year, very few readers, very few sales. After I brought A Bullet for Carlos out, it started picking up. When I brought out Murder Has Consequences, it started picking up even more. So every time you bring out a new book and get new readers and somebody says, hey, you know, I really like this guy, and tell someone else about it, that brings you more followers and more readers. And that's how you have to do it, I think. You just have to plug away at it until it happens.
And, I, of course, you know, your book is available, wherever you can buy books. Again, we're speaking with Giacomo Giammatteo here about not just the book A Bullet for Carlos, which is out now and which is new, but, you know, kind of like your whole repertoire and everything that you've written. So when you kind of go forward and you say that you're going to continue the other series and you're going to continue now this series, is it going to kind of be you're going to have one book in each kind of going forward? Are you going to kind of do maybe two of one and then go on to another one? How do you kind of vision yourself, you know, that you're going to do going forward?
So I hope to do, there are three series. I hope to do a book a year in each one. Now that's putting a lot of pressure on me to do
that's
it.
That's a lot of pressure.
I normally write pretty quickly, and I've got a phenomenal group of beta readers who help tremendously. So the third series is called the Redemption Series, and that first book will be out at the end of the year. And that's what I'm hoping for, one book a year in each series.
So going forward in the future, what's the next book that you're going to have out?
It's called Necessary Decisions, and it's the first book in the Redemption Series. And that features
Yeah, so you got a lot of exciting things. And that's a lot of pressure to kind of do three books in a year. I mean, that's a lot of work.
It is. It's a lot of work, but it's fun work.
Yeah, and I guess and that's very important, that as long as it's fun, then it's not kind of really work then, is it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
My wife might disagree with that, but
well, wives typically do disagree with us, so that's okay too. They don't understand us. They just don't get it. They don't understand the man mentality. And I'm not here to explain that, because you know what? If you haven't understood it by now, then you're just never going to get it.
Well, I don't know, because there are so many tremendously talented women authors out there nowadays. I think that's the other thing that independent publishing has brought about. There are a lot of new authors, and from every place and everywhere and every background. It's very interesting to see it.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting time. I always tell everybody that the supply has far outlasted. Right now the supply is greater than the demand, and good thing. It's a good thing for readers, but it's kind of a bad thing for authors, because, like you said, you have to try to weave your way through this web of trying to get new readers.
Yeah, you have to fight a little harder for it, but in the end, I think it'll pay off.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Giacomo, we want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure to be able to speak with you. And, wish you best of luck going forward with your blog tour and everything that you have going on. So I just want to thank you.
You bet, John. Thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. You have a good day.
Bye now.
So, again, everybody, that is Giacomo Giammatteo, Giacomo, Giammatteo.com. And the book is called A Bullet for Carlos, the first in the Blood Flows South series, but there is a little novella out called Finding Family, which gives you a little setup to what's going to be going on in the series. But also don't forget that he has now three series, which the Redemption series, like he said, is going to be the next book that he's going to have out. But he also has his Friendship and Honor series, which just sounds fascinating also. With the second verse, Murder Has Consequences, the first murder takes time. So he's bringing together a nice library of definitely suspense thriller books that you can go and check out now. You got Christmas coming up. You got a lot of things. Wintertime's coming for the East Coast, for the Midwest, for those places where there's not a lot of stuff that's going to be happening. It's not like out here in Southern California where you have great weather and you can kind of do whatever you need to do. So this is the time now when you can start building your library. And that's one of the things that I just want to stress. And we are going to be back here with our next guest and our last guest of the show, New York Times number one best-selling author, Catherine Coulter. And her book is called Bombshell. And she also did another little thing that was with J.T. Ellison called Final Cut, that this is the first time that she had written together. So it's been fabulous, and we'd like to have Catherine back on because she's always so fascinating to talk to. So we will be right back with Catherine Coulter.
Moment.
everybody, welcome back here to our last segment of the show with number one New York Times bestselling author Catherine Coulter, and she's going to just a couple things that are in the works. The latest book that she has coming out is a collaboration with J.T. Ellison that's called Final Cut, and that book is going to come out on Tuesday, and she had another one released in July called Bombshell, which was hers on her own. So we want to welcome Catherine to the show. So Catherine, thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I am just great, John. Hope all is well with you as well.
Yeah, everything is just great. And again, it's exciting times. Tuesday is the first collaborative book that you had out with J.T. Ellison. It's called The Final Cut. You have a sweepstakes going on, a lot of build-up to this book. So give us a little bit about Final Cut and the inside part of it.
Well, do you want to know how it came about? Do you think you're...
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
well, what happened was...
Story.
Well, it's been a year and a half, a little longer than a year and a half ago. I came up with this character appeared in my mind. His name was Nicholas Drummond, and he was a Brit. And not only did I have Nicholas alive and well, but there was his family. And his mom was American. She was a early 80s TV comedian in a show called Fish Out of Water. His dad was in the Home Office. His grandfather was the 8th Baron de Vecchi. And so he's two steps away from the peerage in England. We even had the butler comb. So, I mean, there were all these people running around in my head. I even knew where they lived, everything. But I knew I couldn't write two big books a year. So I thought, well, look at Clive Cussler. You know, he writes with a number of different people, including his son. So I called Clive, and I said, tell me about this, because I'm thinking this might be a way to go. And he did. He told me everything. He said, he said, look, if you don't, well, anyway, he said a whole lot of things. But basically, I followed his advice. And then spoke to my agent, who was very, very thrilled about this, and said, as one would expect him to say, oh, well, we would have any number of writers in-house who could do this for you. And I blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I called Barbara. I called people all over the country that I knew recommending suspense thriller writers. And then we got a whole bunch of books in. And my husband read about 20 books, and I read about 20 books. And what was the most serendipitous, amazing thing was we both said independently, J.T. Ellison. I'd never heard of her. I had never read her before. And so it turns out, which is really, you know, funny, is she is with Trident, with another agent that I've known for 1,000 years at Trident. So, I called her up, and she was very tickled about it. And in terms of contractual stuff, it was very, very easy because they were all
right.
In the same agency. And then I flew her out here, and I already had the idea for the first book. And I had gotten part of it from my sister-in-law. She said, why don't you do something about the Koh-i-Noor diamond? I said, the Koh-i-Noor diamond is the centerpiece, the 106-carat diamond in the center of the Queen Mum's crown, the crown jewels in the Tower of London. And so JT and I, we spent days brainstorming. I will tell you, I think she's brilliant. She's funny. She is always positive. She was excited. And things I never even thought about, for example, I'm very type A. What if she'd been type B? I would have killed her.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't have worked. It wouldn't have worked. She sits down and she works. She's disciplined. What if she hadn't been? I would have killed her. You know, so all of these things you have that I just lucked into. In fact, I've got to say now she's probably one of the top three best decisions I've ever made in my life, because now I knew I was going to become very intimate with this person. And sure enough, we speak every day, email at least every day about something. And we ran into just all the problems Clive talked about, but I realized they weren't, and we got through them. We got through them, and we realized now with the second book called Yard of Graves, isn't that a cool title?
Yeah,
and we're going to keep them international. For example, in the final cut, we go to Switzerland and Paris and England, because, of course, he is English. He was
right.
raised in England, even though his mom is American. And in the second book, we'll be going to Scotland. And I love Scotland. I've been all over it. JT loves Scotland. As a matter of fact, she's going to be there in a couple of weeks, and she's going to visit the actual place where we determine blah, 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 I will not tell you, is going to happen. So what we did when we did the second book, we outlined it, we tried to get really, really nitty-gritty. And one of the huge problems that's now gone is we now both are on the same page with all the characters. And I cannot tell you what a relief that is. Because
yeah.
I remember she wrote some pages, and I remember reading them. I said, well, who is this person? Because I saw Nicholas Drummond in an entirely different way. But now we both know him. We all agree. So, you know, all the real tough part, I think, is behind us. But as a result, this book, oh, let me back up a second. Do you want me to just keep talking?
Yeah, you just keep going. This is fabulous.
Okay.
I'm enthralled. I love listening to you talk. I mean, we always try to catch you, like, you know, like in the Thriller Fest whenever we see you, and you're always so gracious. It's always so great to hear you talk. So, yeah, keep going.
Well, if you get bored, just throw some eggs my way. But, you know, with the FBI series, we have Savage and Sherlock. They are going to be in... They will be crossovers. For example, Savage and Sherlock are front and center in the final cut. So all the people who read the FBI series will not be disappointed at all. And then the book I'm writing right now called Power Play, FBI, out next summer, Nicholas Drummond is in it. And the name of the series is A Brit in the FBI. And the reason, and at the end of this book, you'll see why that's true. And of course, that couldn't be the case unless his mother was American. But what's interesting is my people at the FBI, friends, wonderful people, they checked, and indeed, Nicholas is the first Brit in the FBI. So that's a wonderful thing. But the title, the final cut, you'll realize the significance of it. It's the perfect title for the book when you read it, about the coin or diamond. And as I said, it's an international thriller. It takes place, I think, in 4 days. So it's just zap, 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 and just very exciting. But one thing, I know now what I wanted to say, with the 18 FBI books, my editor is my husband. He doesn't edit any of the other books, but he edits the FBI because, frankly, they are so complex that there's no way I can get everything. There's no way I can make sense of everything. So it needs that other brain, and he is truly the editor from hell. He's absolutely wonderful. We no longer
and
have
you know,
divorce court. I'm sorry?
And the first thing that comes to mind when you were kind of talking was arranged marriage, kind of, because you guys had not been together, and you kind of like this arranged marriage, and you weren't really sure how it was going to work out between the two of you.
You're back to me and JT.
Yeah, back with you and JT, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right. To be perfectly honest here, I never had a thought that it wouldn't work. It never even occurred to me that it wouldn't work. And as I was telling you before, since my husband edits all the FBI, when they get to my editor at Putnam, there's nothing for her to do because they are perfect. They really, really are. There's very, very little. So I learned on the final cut what a fine editor she is, because when I sent the book off to her, I didn't hear from a week and a half, and I thought, oh, dear, you know, it's crap. She's vomiting. It's horrible, blah, blah, blah. She got back to me, and she said, here's what needs to be done, boom, 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 boom. So I just pulled the whole book back, and I went through the entire book and said, JT, you need to do this. You need to do this. I'll do this. I'll do this. And it would not be the excellent book it is if it hadn't been for my editor. And now I know what a great editor she is, because she's really never had to do all that much, you know, with the FBI.
Yeah.
But the way it ended up, what's been absolutely amazing, John, is so far there have been 6 big reviews, and all of them are just over the top excellent. I've never seen reviews like that for any book in my life. USA Today called. They said they had wanted to do a brief thing on me, but they read the book and loved it, so they wanted to expand it and include JT and blah, blah, blah. This is wonderful. The New York Times put up a thing next to the bestseller list when Bombshell came out. So everything
right.
is just really positive signs for this book. And it's excellent. It's just, but to be honest, I never even thought of a failure. I never even thought of it. I think JT was scared out of her mind. But but honestly, I just never even considered it. And she's a phenomenal person. I just absolutely adore her, and she's a brilliant writer. And I'm very glad the book of hers I read wasn't one of her really gnarly, down and dirty, say it, everything, serial killer stuff. Otherwise, I wouldn't have read the book. But I got
yeah.
one that wasn't like that. So, I was all innocent. But it's interesting because she, the book sounds exactly like me. It sounds exact. Readers will not be able to tell the difference. So she said at Thriller Fest, which I found fascinating, that she had a book after she finished Final Cut, she had to finish one of her books. And normally she says, she's like a navel-gazing, a melancholy world sort of thinker, and only like 25% dialogue. Well, she went up to over 50% dialogue in that book because I'm very, very dialogue heavy. In fact, I'm dialogue character driven. So it's kind of altered her style a bit, and she said it's so much faster with all the dialogue. So hopefully, this is opening up more ways for her to look at things for their own novels. And, of course, it's helping me. Although I don't know, she is really a technology expert, and I am not. So she has added a huge dimension with the technology, which is wonderful. So now I will shut up because I've told you everything except the big sweepstakes. Ah,
right.
It's been going on now.
This is a big one.
Yeah, about a week and a half.
This is a big one.
Yeah, and what it is, it's Adler's of New Orleans. They're a big jewelry store in New Orleans, plus they have a big online presence. And for national advertising, which we've given them, they have given us a $4,800 halo diamond pendant, which is incredible.
Wow.
And the reason it's $4,800 instead of more, it started out more, and then they said, no, a maximum of $5,000, or you run into all sorts of different state problems with a gift.
Okay.
And I do want to say that, I can't say that, but I can say this. Just go to facebook.com/Catherine Coulter Books. You can enter right there. Actually, you can enter on my website. You can enter on pingua.com. You can enter everywhere. And this is a pretty cool gift, I think. It's a very cool gift. And, it's valuable. It's really meaningful.
Oh, yeah. I've never heard of anybody ever doing anything like this.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the legal department at Putnam said, whoa, how did this come about? Did Catherine buy this? And they said, no. And it's a good thing for Adler's because, it costs considerably less for them wholesale, and they get tremendous nationwide advertising. So it's a real win-win, and JT and I will be there in a week and a half to actually sign in the store in New Orleans. And so, as I said, this is wonderful, wonderful. So I'm very excited, and JT is too. She's wedding herself as we speak. And I guess we all are. We all are.
Yeah, yeah.
So any questions? Because talk about talking your ear off. I'll shut up now.
Oh. No, I mean, everything that you always do is always just so fascinating, and you're always just so engaging, and that's the one thing
that fans always love is because, you know, you are an author that is so engaging and you're just so open. And, you know, and that's the one thing that I was curious to know, too, is fans of your FBI series, this is like a seamless transition for them to be able to, you know, the fans that have read Bombshell, which came out in July, now they're able to go over and they read the final cut, and it is just like a seamless transition. That's the way you made this.
Yes, that was always my intention to do that. And so now readers, if they like the FBI series, they will basically have two books a year. And that will be, you know, you will not have Savage and Sherlock front and center in Yard of Graves, the second book, but they will be in it. They will be in it. And in again, the book that I'm writing, the FBI book, is got Nicholas Drummond in it. He appears three times, I think. So we try to keep the cross-fertilization going. And, of course, the books should feed off each other as well, which makes the publisher numb with happiness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And publishers, you know, I think they're already numb, but the happiness part is the good part.
they are there beside themselves. They really, really are. So this is an excellent thing. So it's a win-win,
right.
I think, for everybody, for the publisher, for the readers, and for JT and me.
So now, if your main character now is sitting in a room with both you and JT, what is something that you would probably want to ask him that you'd want to get to know a little bit more of him that maybe the readers are going to start seeing now as the series continues?
I do not know what you mean, John. I know him backwards and forwards, so does JT.
Okay, is there any kind of surprises that the readers are going to start noticing as the series goes forward? How is it just going to be, you know, how are you going to be, you know, going to, like, take him kind of going forward? Are you going to give them a little bit more, a little bit more about his background and everything that he has going forward?
Yeah, for example, he was, before he went into Scotland Yard, and he was currently a detective chief inspector, and then at the end of the book, you know, in book two, he's going to be in his first week as an FBI agent in the field office in New York City, which is where this book takes place, because we have basically the crown jewels on loan. And that has to be a law passed by Parliament to let the crown jewels leave England to come to the Metropolitan of Art in New York for the Jewel of the Lion exhibit. So you have all the New York office characters now. They're all set. And so they will be further enriched. You already know them. Also, his family in England, you meet them in the final cut. They will be more and more involved. For example, they live in Old Pharaoh Hall, which is about 400 years old, and we have Captain Haddock, who is the resident ghost. We haven't seen him yet, but we will see him. Nicholas, before the Scotland Yard thing, was in the Foreign Service, and he was basically a spy. And something bad happened in Afghanistan when he was there. Something really bad, and that basically closed down the Foreign Service. He couldn't do it anymore. And will we have that baggage in the Yard of Graves? I don't know. It might be another couple of books down the road. He also has an ex-wife. You meet her in the final cut, and she will appear off and on, too. She's a fascinating character. So, yeah, all of these people are just, they will continue to grow and to evolve and to, oh, dear, who's that? I want you to hang on 1 second. Okay, no, can
sure,
you just
go
forget
ahead.
That? No, let's just forget it, if it doesn't bother you guys. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, everything's going to, you know, more and more stuff will be revealed, and we'll think of more and more stuff, too. And
right.
The second
and
book, Yard of Graves, is very complex. It's going to be just a wild, wild book.
And
yes.
So for fans that, you know, so when they're coming in the Tuesday to pick it up, the pacing of the book is, the pacing that you have the book is, of course, fans that know you and know your FBI series, but maybe fans of J.T. Ellison that have not read you, what would you tell them? What would you tell those fans that have said, you know what, you read JT, and this is what you're going to see, and this is how, like, the pacing and the final cut, and this is what it's going to be like for them? Because now you have two sets of fans now that you're bringing into this.
That's correct. What I would say to JT's fans is you can see how brilliant she is by coming to this book, to see how she has adapted and how she has just stormed through. And I will tell them that one of the main characters in this book is her creation entirely, and this is the fox. And this character is absolutely wonderful, and they're going to see how magic JT is in this environment, and they're going to be just – they're just going to be impressed. They're going to be so excited. It's going to knock their socks off. They're going to have a ball, and they're going to just love it because they will see how wonderful she is.
And people that are listening to this right now, you can just hear the enthusiasm in your voice when you talk about it, and that just is so refreshing to be able to hear, you know, just how excited that you are about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Are you going to talk to JT? You really need to.
You know, I would love to try to get a hold of JT and see what she has coming up as far as schedule-wise. But, that would be fascinating to get her side and everything of how it all worked out.
Yes, I think that would be a great thing. And I would just encourage everyone to enter the sweepstakes, and they can pre-order in any format they wish because it's in all of them.
Yeah, it's going to be everywhere. It'll be front and center in all the bookstores when they go in. I'm sure Tuesday, wherever bookstore they go in, they're going to see it right on that front shelf to be able to pick that up.
I sure hope so. And the cover was an absolutely brilliant holographic job by Rich Hasselberger at Putnam. He's never done it before, and it is incredible. You know, I love e-books, and e-books are great, but this deserves to be like on your coffee table. It's so beautiful. How's that?
Yeah, well, we have, and I got the book, and we have the book right now sitting, you know, in our bookshelf, of course. And, I mean, the cover is great. When you look at it, and you can kind of see the diamond and kind of how, you know, how they've kind of done that with the final cut in the middle, with the final, you know, kind of being a little bit cut, I guess you want to say, by the diamond.
Yeah.
It's a fabulous-looking cover, yeah.
Well, I want to know what you think of it after you finish it, John, okay?
Absolutely. We'll definitely send you the review. And, you know, we want to always thank you so much for coming out and talking about it. And, of course, everything that you have going on. And you're going to have a lot of busy years coming up now with two books going out. And your fans have got to be just thrilled to see all the work that you got going on now.
Well, I sure hope so. And thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
All right. You have a good one, Catherine. Thank you again. We'll talk with you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. So, again, everybody, that is Catherine Coulter talking about her book that she collaborated with, J.T. Ellison, called The Final Cut. It is out on Tuesday. It's a fabulous read, I'm telling you. Some of the people that when they write together, you can't really see where one author ends, where the other author begins. This one, you're going to see a perfect collaboration together between two wonderful authors in this book, The Final Cut. Again, on sale on Tuesday, the 17th of September. So if you're listening to us after the 17th, you can buy it. And again, enter that contest for a $4,800 diamond. I mean, come on. I mean, and diamonds are a girl's best friend, but even I'm loving diamonds for that. And you can go to CatherineCoulter.com. You can sign up there to find out a lot more information about the book. You can find her on Facebook to find out a lot more information about the contest and the book and everything she has going on. Because she's like, you know, you just heard on the side. Very engaging, loves the fans, loves speaking with them, and she's always out. And, of course, you can always visit JT Ellison's website at jtellison.com to find out more information about what she is doing. We want to thank all of our guests that we had on the show today, starting with Reba White-Williams and talking about her book, Restrike, and Giacomo Giamatto and talking about his books and everything he has going on, Bullet for Carlos. And, of course, we just had on Catherine Coulter talking about her and JT's book, The Final Cut, along with Bombshell that just came out in July. Again, Wednesday, James Patterson will be on the show. You can go to suspensemagazine.com, click on the Suspense Radio button to see everybody that's coming up, and click on the banner for Crime and Science Radio to see the next show that is coming out from Crime and Science Radio, the new show with B.T. Lyle and Jan Burke. We are very excited about everything that's going on. We are trying to expand our repertoire for you, the fans, to give you more insight about everything and anything that is going on in the suspense thriller genre. So thanks for sticking with us. And we will see you all in the next show tomorrow, everybody. Enjoy and have a fabulous weekend and week.